peuple grec. Salut à toi, petit indien. Salut à toi, punk iranien. Salut à toi, rebelle afghan. Salut à toi, le dissident. Salut à toi, le chilien. Salut à toi, le petit malien. Salut à toi, le mohican. Salut à toi, peuple
On WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Melody Sabarian with your WSLR news headlines for Tuesday, August 26th. Sunday night in Sarasota, a powerful current dragged a child roughly 100 yards through a drain. The accident took place on Bahia Vista Street following a water main break, most likely caused by the heavy rain we saw Sunday night. The young girl was taken to Sarasota Memorial Hospital in critical condition. She was playing near a culvert, and thankfully, the Sarasota County Fire Department was able to locate her quickly. The state crackdown on street art continues, as the Department of Transportation ordered Tampa and St. Pete to remove rainbow-painted crosswalks and other street art. Tampa also erased a Back the Blue message in support of police. Last week, the Florida Department of Transportation painted over the rainbow crosswalk in Orlando that paid homage to the 49 victims who lost their lives in the Pulse nightclub massacre. Since then, community activists have returned each day to restore the rainbow crosswalk, despite the presence of law enforcement. George Wallace, Chief Executive Officer of the LGBT Plus Center Orlando, said that activists will continue to resist. Ken Welsh, the mayor of St. Pete, will not stand up against the painting over, but he said that he will help the community find, quote, lawful ways to celebrate and express our values in the public realm. Truckers and travelers across the state may begin noticing changes at weigh stations. Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer announced that in response to a deadly truck crash earlier this month, all of the state's agricultural inspection stations will now double as federal immigration checkpoints. Uthmeyer suggests that immigrant truck drivers are a danger to the community because they cannot read traffic signs in English. This measure has sparked concern among immigrant rights activists, arguing that these policies can lead to racial profiling, placing additional burdens on commercial drivers. As bulldozers continue to roll on agricultural land in Sarasota County, conservationists are organizing. Tomorrow, August 27th, the Sarasota Citizen Action Network, also known as SCAN, will host a meeting discussing current and future conservation efforts and how residents can get involved. The meeting will be held at the Jacaranda Library in Venice at 5:30 p.m. Speakers include former County Commissioner Charles Hines, Brooke Langston of Big Waters, environmental advocate Joan O'Miller, and Barbara Lockhart of the North Port Conservancy. This has been Melody Sabarian with your WSLR news headlines for Tuesday, August 26th.
I can still see Mama stooped around those cotton stalks. If she picked one, she picked 100 bales. While me and all my brothers would take turnabout, dragging Mama's sack up to the scale.
Good morning. Support for WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069 or at info@manateespirit.com. Support also comes from Dr. Harvey Kaltzis, acupuncture physician, located at 1217 Southeast Avenue, Suite 207 in Sarasota. He has been resolving pain and illness for 50 years with acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, and nutrition. More information can be found by calling 941-366-1110 or by visiting www.hkacup.com. This is the Healthy Living Hour, airing live every other Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. My name is Rebecca Acosta, local acupuncture physician, and I am your host. A huge thanks this morning to our soundboard operator, John Dickman, host of Monday morning's Blues to Bluegrass from 7 to 9 a.m. right here at WSLR. Our goal is to offer a wide variety of topics and guests to better inform and educate our community on current health and wellness issues. As a disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. Further, no one here is providing any type of medical diagnosis, treatment, nor advice. Everything said here is solely for general information and to foster critical thinking. We encourage you to consult your doctor for personal medical advice. Good morning, everybody. Another bit of a rainy day here in Sarasota. I have with us, joining us from Fort Pierce on the other coast, Dr. Cynthia Ann Hayes Hurst. She has her doctorate in Chinese medicine. She holds actually three healthcare licenses, and I will ask her to introduce herself and give us a little bit of her background. And today we're going to talk about our role, your role in healthcare. Dr. Cindy, please, thank you so much for joining us via Zoom this morning. And so good to have you. Thank you for your time. Can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, how you got into this medicine? Oh, Cindy. Can you put mute? Do you have some music for us, John?
Yeah, I'll play your music here.
We'll take a break, a quick break.
Oh, you're good. You're good. You got me now?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Cindy, sorry about that. Okay. So go ahead. Please tell us a little bit. Thank you again, and please share a little bit about your background.
I'm Dr. Cynthia Ann Hayes Hurst. I go by Dr. Cindy. I have been in healthcare since 1989. I started off working in medical offices, went to school for respiratory therapy, and about a year out of school, I found out that a lot of my patients were super, super sick, and they would get a little bit better, and then they would come back, and they'd be sicker again. And it got so bad at one point that I actually walked out of a patient's room and asked one of the physicians, like, is there anything else that we could possibly be doing? And he, with a very straight face, and he said, unless you have an extra set of lungs in your back pocket, you're doing it. And I thought, well, that was a really not very satisfying answer to me. And I thought, you know what, there's got to be better ways to do this. So I went back to school for massage therapy. I graduated with a massage therapy degree in 94, and I started doing cardiac and pulmonary rehab. The bad part about it was you actually had to have something seriously wrong in order to actually qualify for cardiac and pulmonary rehab. And the good part was you could actually see that physical medicine works. If you move your body, even if you don't have really good resources and your numbers are limited, you have a poor ejection fraction or your pulmonary function values aren't good, you don't have good lung volumes, you can still make improvements. And that was inspiring. So my patients who were struggling to exercise were my biggest inspiration. And I was like, oh my gosh, everybody needs to know how to take better care of themselves before they get to the point where these guys were. And I didn't really know what else I could do. I just kept on doing my little acute care, critical care, emergency medicine, and my massage on the side to make me feel better. And I tried to do as many shifts as I could actually in the rehab, because that's where I could actually see people improving. Of course, catastrophic care is always going to be there, and there's always going to be jobs there. And for a while, I was able to do quite a bit of time with the patient actually making improvements, and limited time with the people who were really suffering and dying. But insurance changed, and in 1999, they got rid of rehab. And even the hospital-based program that I was doing had severe limitations. And by 2004, the choice was be in charge or go back to just working in the hospital. So I took, because I had already been downsized out of one rehab job and I didn't want to do it again. It was soul crushing. So I went back to critical care and emergency medicine and did most of my time in that. But I went back to school in 2014 for acupuncture. Acupuncture is a job I wish I had known about the whole time because it incorporated everything that I had been driving for, striving towards. It helps people with their nutrition. It helps them with movement. It helps them with their internal medicine issues. It is a preventative medicine at its core. However, it's super good for things that are chronic, long-term, things that were overlooked or missed, or just we have great ways of explaining to ourselves why we didn't go to the doctor or why we didn't get something done. And by the time we actually realize it's a severe problem, it's gotten to the point where now we might end up in a hospital in a critical care situation where we don't want to be. Acupuncture incorporates everything that I had learned all the way up until, 2014. And then in 2016, I had the opportunity to go to the Shaolin Temple in China and do some training there. And their biggest training was about being the two things I got from it was be happy every day, because chronic stress will ruin your life. It will cause you to have healthcare problems. And also the importance of that physical medicine. They had us up moving every morning, 5:30 in the morning, meditation, physical movement, Qigong. We were moving all day long. Now, realistically, in the real world, we have to go do things. We have to go to work. We have to care for our children. We have a lot of tasks that we have to do. And unfortunately, a lot of times we get caught up in those little tiny things of all the necessary items that we must do every single day. And we forget about the importance of just being or doing things for ourselves. So my biggest push right now is patient education and advocacy and trying to improve how we live.
Yeah. Thank you, Cindy. That's such a great overview of you. And you and I, if I can just give a little background, you and I met, was it 3 years ago? In Washington, mm-hmm. D.C., we attended a national fly-in to advocate and basically lobby for a specific bill up there. It was the Medicare for Seniors Act.
Yes.
And where Medicare, a number of years ago, just maybe 3-4 years ago, they changed Medicare, which, as we all know, literally takes an act of Congress. No, it's literal. And they did such a great service to the Medicare recipients where they can actually get acupuncture for one diagnosis only that it's approved for, which is chronic low back pain. And my understanding is that is back pain over 12 weeks. That's chronic low back pain. The problem or the gap or the miss was that providers like you and myself who have that licensed acupuncture board certified designation, we're not Medicare providers. We don't have a seat at the Medicare table. So the Medicare policyholders they have the benefit, but they don't have access to the most highly trained in that profession. So they're, it's hard to find and it's hard to use their insurance for them. So we were just trying to lobby to our congressman there, like, hey, can you support this bill? We're not changing anything. We just want to take care of this patient population that so desperately needs help, non-pharmacological and non-surgical help with this. We are part of the solution. And in that meeting with you there, you've become one of my dearest friends and we talk weekly. So thank you for doing this, but that's just a little thing. And you're very active. You are, chair of the advocacy chair for our Florida State Acupuncture Association. You go to Tallahassee annually, do the same thing there, and you travel to D.C. as well each year since I've met you. So thank you for your activism and advocacy work for all of us and for the patient population. I think that's important. And I think a lot of people don't know what many of us have to do in the background.
There's a lot of work that goes on in the background, and usually it's only a few people that are doing it. The important part, though, I think for everybody is to realize that we all have a role in how healthcare goes for us and for our families. A lot of times we feel like we are being boxed in by a particular model, or we don't like the model, or we think the model should change, but nobody really has really good solutions for it. And unfortunately, our population is aging. Our children are having less and less positive resources, and we are losing a lot of ground with basic daily care. And we need to make sure that those things are being addressed, because if we don't have good nutrition, if we aren't having good movement, if we aren't going outside and being exposed to the environment and having this energy exchange with the world around us, there's going to be a lot more problems. There's problems with communication and social interactions. And in a world where there's so much going on and it's overwhelming, we don't have the time to do the daily care for ourselves that we really need to do to keep ourselves happy and healthy and have long, productive lives. And everybody's in a hurry. We get stuck on our little tiny things that we must do that have to be done. And we forget the joy of living. We forget to eat real food. We go through drive-thrus and spend gobs of time in the drive-thru to get some not so good food product when we could have gone home and had something really, really good, or made it ahead of time or something like that. So there's a lot of interesting things that have occurred over time because of convenience factors and our hurried lifestyle. And those are the things I think that we need to probably hone in on, because those are the things that we can change ourselves that will improve our health and the health of our family members and our communities.
Absolutely. And again, if you're just tuning in or just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Cindy, acupuncture physician who has her doctorate. Not all of us do. And she's one of the handful that does. She's over in Fort Pierce. I refer to her regularly if I have a patient that I just feel she would be more helpful to them, with all her background of the respiratory therapy, working in a hospital setting. And so I refer many of my chronic lung issue patients to her. And so thanks again for joining us, Cindy. John, before we continue, John, do you have a little public service announcement for us, please?
I do. It's a community wellness fair will be held at Dragon Rises College of Oriental Medicine on Saturday, October 4th, from 10 to 3 p.m. Dragon Rises College is located just north of the airport at 6815 14th Street West in Bradenton. All are welcome to attend. More information can be found by calling 941-289-0450 or online at www.dragonrises.edu. Again, that number is 941-894-0450.
Yes, Dr. Cindy, thank you so much. And I just want to say, we are live here at WSLR. Our studio lines are open. I should say is, it's one line. But in that number, if you'd like to call, if you have any questions for Dr. Cindy, that number is 941-954-8636. We welcome any questions or comments that you have for us this morning. And again, Dr. Cindy, thank you for being here. And we're talking about our role in healthcare. That's kind of the topic for this morning. And, you know, I'm always telling patients, poor Roger there in the background, I probably sound like a broken record, but it is true. We have to stack more cards in our favor, especially as we hit about age 30, 40, you know, before we get into that more middle age and a little older. We have to do more better things for us, less harmful things. You know, we just have to put those pieces in place. And you and I had a conversation, Dr. Cindy, I think it was just this week, we were talking about one of the lackings in our current allopathic healthcare model. They're burdened. We have a doctor shortage pretty much everywhere, especially here in Florida. You know, about 15 years ago when I was at a health conference, the data back then projected that this baby boomer age, they're going into retirement. I believe the number was 10,000 people per day are retiring. And we don't have that whole infrastructure, medical infrastructure to handle this population going on to Medicare. And they're feeling that, you know, a lot of people can't get into the doctor quickly, or doctors, I've heard this a lot and read this a lot, that they're not able to accept new patients. They're full. So, and you and I talked about something I think many of us in medicine recognize is COVID changed a lot. The pandemic changed a lot. And one of the things is the importance of the physical exam. And, you know, and I know like during COVID, everything, you know, they had to do something. So a lot got shunted to telehealth, which has become really good. But I was even talking with a physician assistant that I was in office with back then in 2020. And her concern too was that, you know, most of the diagnosis is done in that physical exam. They palpate the thyroid, look for nodules, palpate the abdomen. You know, are there any lumps, nodules, hardness, masses, you know, stuff with the liver, stuff with other things in there. And when, you know, a lot, they just maybe the telehealth can't, we can't do that on telehealth. And some don't have time to properly do it because their waiting rooms are full and they've got to get those people through. Can you elaborate on that a bit more?
Yeah, we were talking, and it's funny because I started getting a group of patients that were coming in, and they had already gone to their regular healthcare provider. They had already gotten diagnostic testing. They really hadn't gotten any firm guidance in where they were headed. You could do physical therapy. We can give you shots or injections. But a lot of things were actually getting overlooked. I had two patients that were really, really, I was concerned about. One I had sent to an orthopedic surgeon for an evaluation because this was an ongoing problem. It wasn't getting better. They had already had all their testing done, and they really just needed to talk to the doctor about what their choices would be going forward. And the doctor didn't even watch them walk, didn't assess the joint, didn't look at anything, and they told me had their hand on the door. They said the entire conversation lasted maybe 3 minutes. This is a cognitive patient. They're not confused. And they were there really for surgical options, but they would prefer to do non-surgical things first. If there's anything that has been missed that hadn't been addressed yet, they wanted to do that. But if they were given a strong information regarding all their options, they wanted to hear everything that was available. And the practitioner literally didn't look at the record and didn't listen to their needs and walked out that door in under 5 minutes. So I was like, okay, well, that was a one-off, right? That can't possibly be happening regularly. And then I started getting many other people that had similar kinds of circumstances. Then I had a patient who had been evaluated by many practitioners, seen, I think, six different providers, had been given all kinds of supplements and nutritional support, had gone to a chiropractor, had gone to an orthopedic, had gone to another country for an evaluation, and again was given more supportive nutritional supplements, physical therapy. They eventually come to my office, and at this point it had been about 6 years of journey for them trying to find a problem. And sadly enough, the problem was identified with a tuning fork, because I was checking the nerve. I was checking to see what they felt here and here on opposite sides of their spine. And their problem was resolved with physical movement, resetting their muscles. And it didn't take long. And it was amazing how all these specialists who could have identified the problem, and several who were actually in the physical medicine realm who could have helped resolve the problem, nobody figured it out. And I think a lot of it has to do with time limitations. We have only so many minutes and so many people to see. And I think that affects a lot of our patient care. So it's, we've turned more to a business model and less of a patient care model. And I think that's what they're describing to me when they come in. It's not that the doctor doesn't care. This is the perception by the patient. My doctor doesn't care. They're not listening to me. They don't have time for me. I got all the testing done. They didn't even look at it. Or sometimes the results aren't being given. Most importantly, the primary care is now turned into the referral person. And they refer you out to all the specialists, but they're not getting a copy of the reports back to them. They're supposed to be the person who's organizing and pulling together all that information so that they get a good, well-rounded look at what's happening. And those primary care providers are not getting the information back to them. So it's very hard to help people make their best choices and give them the best ideas if you're not getting the information back, even though you're sending them out for all the right things. So there is definitely a whole lot of communication stuff that's happening, and mostly based on time constraints and from what I can see. So it's very nice to know that if you have a concern and you have a provider who has a few minutes to spend with you, you might be able to tease out the fibers of what's going on. So a lot of times your acupuncturist has a bit more time. They will spend, 30 minutes with you. They're going to be hands-on, face-to-face with you during their appointment, and you're going to probably be able to sort out some of these things so that you can go back to your provider with more specific questions or more specific ways of explaining what's going on with you. Because sometimes we don't explain exactly what's going on, and other times we explain really, really good, but nobody seems to get what we're saying. So if you have 5 minutes, or is cut short, bye, see you later, we'll talk next month, it's 3 months, 6 months, whatever down the road, and by that time, this changed, things have shifted. And generally speaking, they haven't shifted in a better direction. So it's just a very difficult time for healthcare providers. It's a very difficult time for patients. And that's why our role in our daily care is so important. When we talk with our friends, everybody's got something going on. Something's going on in their life or their friend's life, or there's always something happening, but nobody's really sure how to address it. And there is this sense of kind of helplessness going on. Helplessness from the provider standpoint, helplessness from the patient standpoint. And that's why I think today's topic of being involved in your care, in your daily health, is so important, because there's so many daily things that we can do that we just don't consider to be part of our health routine or our health care that we miss. People will say, well, I didn't have time to eat breakfast. I drove through the drive-through and I got something that is questionably not even really a real food product. I was too busy and too stressed out by the time I got home to go on a walk or a bike ride or whatever. I didn't have dinner with my family because we were rushing between events, and one person has this and someone has that, and we have homework, and I had paper things that I had to complete for my job, and I had whatever. There's a million reasons why we don't do the things, but eventually we end up with a hard stop. And that hard stop makes us reconsider what we do every day. And I hope that nobody ends up with a hard stop. And our best healthcare system that we have is within our own home. In Chinese medicine, it starts in the kitchen. And that is one of our actually hardest hit areas so far as daily life is people don't cook. They don't prepare foods. They don't interact. Part of cooking is that social interaction. You're talking, you're catching up on your day, you're together. I used to I used to take my kids outside in the backyard, and I'd take a little trash can, and we would peel potatoes. Aww. My neighbor kids would come over and peel potatoes. They were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know potatoes were like a real thing. And that, like, I thought they came out of a box and they were these dry, dehydrated flakes. They had no clue. You have a garden. People don't really have a lot of gardens anymore. Well, I don't have space. I can't do this. You could have a small container garden. You could have something on your patio or your porch. You could have some small semblance of a garden. Kids love it. They love to see things growing. And when I first got my first home and property where I could actually plant one in the ground, my son would run out every single morning to see what happened overnight. You know, he was so excited about it. And kids still, I mean, my grandkids, they love, oh my gosh, you know, what's going on? Oh, and you know what, how did that happen? And at one point we made a fish pond and a hydroponic setup for a summer project. And the fish provide the fertilizer for the plants clean the water and bring it back to the fish. They were totally mesmerized by the whole thing. They helped build it. They were just in awe of the whole thing. And some of the schools that, like in the elementary school, they'll have little gardens. They'll plant outside their little classrooms and they're by their back windows. And I think all those things are really important because those are just daily care things that people are losing track of. I know that you and Roger participate in a local farm that has organic vegetables that have these like community farms that you can go and you can help at. You can get fruits and vegetables. You can get things that are for, and you can learn about those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's been the funnest, I think, for me. My roots are, I'm a country girl. I grew up on a farm and lost it moving to the city, you know, and so that's been a fun thing to go back to. My organic jalapeno plant is still just popping out jalapenos like crazy in my tower garden. We don't have a big space, but I try to grow a few things, definitely. And yeah, just expounding on what you just mentioned, because there's a lot to unpack there. I just want to really reiterate, we're not in any way bashing the medical, you know, Western medicine, the doctors, that they're doing the best they can in a really tough, challenging system. But there are some, you know, gaps, there are some failings within that. And I think these conversations are necessary to what can we do? What do we need to watch for? It's about education and it's about, you know, as you're saying, being proactive, being preventative. And then too, I'd like to add that, you know, I tell my patients like, hey, it is so important to have a primary care, just to be established somewhere, because that's getting a little harder to do, you know, currently. And I mean, case in point, I just had a call from a 78-year-old retired dentist, you know, looking to do acupuncture and some of my nutritional work just yesterday. And, you know, I'm like, you have to have a primary care physician, you know? And so I referred him to one that I thought was really quality here in town that we use, that, you know, we go to. I have one I go to just once a year, unless something changes, but it's good to be established. Because if you're in need and there's an emergency, it's going to be harder to establish somebody after the fact. So it's always good to just have your foot in the door, be a patient on record. I think it makes everybody's life a little more easier down that path. And, you know, so yeah, thank you for all of that. And, we talked about, you know, just the fun of your kids learning, seeing a plant grow. And I think that's our inherent nature as human beings. You know, we want to foster, nourish, care for something, watch something good grow. And I just love that analogy. So thank you. About our kids, and I know it's hard. Like, I am so grateful that I didn't that I grew up in a small little town in North Wisconsin in the 70s. We were playing in the dirt. We were playing in mud puddles. We were playing in the rain. You know, we played with our neighbors. We didn't have the TV on. There were no cell phones. There were no screens, really. There was Saturday night at the movies. You got a movie one night of the week, and you didn't have a choice. There was one movie, Saturday night at the movie, and because there weren't that many radio stations or radio TV stations. And, you know, so it was just such a simpler, easier time, and we were out in the fresh air and moving, exercising, running, all those, you know, just things that a lot of our inner city kids just don't have. I mean, it's a whole different world. And that's a whole nother topic on screens and the impact on children's brains and health. And I'll have to find an expert on that one. But yeah, what do you notice and what can we do for, you know, our children? Apart from, you know, trying to grow something and cooking together.
Just touching base with them every day, not setting them down in front of those screens, because it is so tempting. I noticed that even grandparents are taking their kids and their grandkids out, and there's a phone there, and they're watching a movie or some program on that during the time that they should be hanging out and interacting. So there's a lot of I don't know how to say it, but there's a lot of times where normally people would be interacting and communicating, and even though they're in person, they're not doing that. So it's so weird. And I went to a conference. I actually did a presentation in London, and there was a gentleman there from China. There was a gentleman there from India. There was a gentleman there from another. These are all different doctors from Washington State. And they were talking about how we are not communicating. So, you know, you could take your kids for a walk. You could go on a bike ride. You can take them to the park. So there's some amazing parks. They are building all kinds of amazing parks. I see them on the little Florida, you know, visit places in Florida sites. Take them to, you know, the beach, the springs, whatever. Take them to go do something. Some of the most fun things I've done with my kids are going to the springs, and then, you know, we stayed in a cabin. It was a family cabin. It had a couple rooms and a pullout couch, and it had access to just walking down and going into the spring. And my daughter found this little turtle, and she was like, oh my gosh. And she picked him up, and then he starts wiggling around, and then she drops him back in the water. And then that night we were telling stories. Nonsensical, funny, just stories about how this turtle was coming to get her, and he was going to climb up the stilted cabin to go slump, slump, slump up to the window. And they were just on the edge of their seats, you know, listening to the story and having that, like, and they would make up their own stories, right? We don't do those things. I sat on the couch with my grandson the other day, and he drew in a notebook, and he just drew all these little pictures. And there's nothing written, it's just pictures. And so I asked him to tell me the story. And so he told me the story about the pictures. And then he got to the end of it. And I said, wow, that was amazing. And then he went to the beginning and he told me another story with the same pictures. It reminded me of those little books where you would get it, you would read it. And it was like, if you go down into the basement, turn to page 11. If you, you know, if you run upstairs, go to page 20. You know, you change the answers to the story as you went through the book. And he was doing that just with his little drawings that he showed me and just changing the story. I think he had five different stories off the same drawings. And just using his mind, or he would go swimming and they develop all kinds of, you know, just do imaginative play. Let them be kids and participate in it. It's good for you. It's good for your brain, because when we're little, we don't have these super firm structures and everything is kind of movable. And as we get older, we get very stuck in our ways, in our thought processes, in our structure. And it's good to have interactions and friendships with people who have different mindsets and different ideas. It's always nice to think from a different person's point of view rather keep sticking on with yours, because sometimes yours point of view, you get tired of your own point of view sometimes. Okay. So it's good to hear other people's point of view, and people are like, oh no, nobody likes my point of view. They get frustrated with me or whatever. And I said, it's not that they're frustrated, they just don't understand. And some people aren't willing to think about what it from a different perspective. So kids force us to do that unknowingly, right? Because they always have a different way of going about things. And you're like, no, do it this way. This is the way it's always worked this way. Let's keep doing it this way. And you're like, no, I don't think that's going to work. And believe it or not, a lot of times their little weird ways of doing things, they work out just fine. They're just not the way that you expected them to be. That's all. And we get stuck in the way we expect things to be. And we don't allow that opportunity for, in Chinese medicine, for that flow. Things should be able to flow from one thing to another. And they're always changing. Nothing stays set in stone in the same way. Everything changes. Healthcare has changed in the past 40 years. A ton. There's all kinds of things that change around us. And that's the beauty of the seasons, right? The world changes. We need to be more like that and go with the flow of things and look at things from different perspectives and not be quite so stuck in one particular mindset.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for that. And I mean, you know, we've lost that curiosity and that fun and playfulness, because life sometimes isn't any of those things. You know, life becomes hard and, you know, a lot of parents, families are just, they're juggling a lot. They're juggling so many responsibilities, so many roles and responsibilities that we can just get bogged down in that for sure. I love this quote. I found it yesterday and this kind of ties in. Ben Franklin had said, life's tragedy is that we get too old. We get old too soon and wise too late. And I think what you were just talking about, the wisdom of the children, but also that wisdom that comes with aging too. If we could just put those together a lot sooner and implement that, that would be so much better. We'll take a little, John, do you have just one more PSA for us, please?
I do. Parking during pregnancy just got easier. A recent law allows all pregnant women to get a temporary disabled parking permit. More information can be found by contacting the DMV or county tax collector's office. No number given.
No number given.
No phone number.
Yeah.
No. So that's okay. You can find it. Google it.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, John. And again, we're talking with Dr. Cindy from Fort Pierce, Dr. Cynthia Ann Hayes-Hurst. And she's with us. We're talking about building a healthier lifestyle with ourselves and our family. And Dr. Cindy, those of you who know me know that I have a grandfather who's going to turn 101 this October. And he's hilarious. He lives home alone on the family farm. And I learned so much from him. I wish I had the wisdom 20, 30 years ago to really just cherish that time. And if I could only go back and just sit at his feet and hear his stories, I would give anything to turn that time back and grab that opportunity. But one story my aunt shared with me recently was when she takes him to the doctor's office, he sits there and looks around the waiting area and he sees all these people waiting there, and they're on their phones. They're on their cell phones, you know, swiping with their thumb, their screens. And he said, I want to fit in. So he takes out his billfold and he just starts swiping it up and he like, nothing's happening. But anyway, he's a stitch. He's kind of makes up his own jokes. So, Dr. Cindy, you know, we talked about, our kids. Can you go on to food? And I think that's where you and I both see this clinically, is a lot of people struggle with food. We're eating packaged processed foods. I think if there's anything, good, positive with, this current administration health front is that they're really shedding a spotlight, pointing a spotlight onto the harmful impacts of processed food. And yeah, can you share a little bit more on our food? Like, what are some doable things that families can do?
Well, the doable things is actually cooking at home. The scary thing is a lot of people are saying, I don't know how. What are you talking about? So my kids even will say, you know, it's really weird that my oldest kid is 21 years older than my youngest kid. And life changed a lot so far as everything in that time frame. So people used to cook at home. They used to make chicken soup. Oh, my. You throw the whole chicken in there? Are you serious? There's bones. My goodness, we can't do this. Why are you putting that in there? Why are there bones? Well, because there's minerals. There's marrow. Things should be cooked low and slow to get these nutrients. So people are like, I don't even understand what that's about. So I think a lot of nutritional things are being lost because we don't know people who know how to cook or why we cook the way that we cook. And that has probably been going on for the last, you know, I would say probably for the past 20 years, severely impacted health. My kids will come home from school. Well, my friend eats a pack of Skittles every day. And I was like, wow, her dentist must be so concerned. Oh, yeah, the dentist hates it. You know, she's got 50,000 cavities. She has a bunch of cavities. But besides just the cavities, Mom, like, what is this going to do to my friend's health? She seems okay right now. Why is all this extra sugar a problem? So people don't realize that over time, if you don't provide your body with the proper nutrients, the cells that are being regenerated, your red blood cells are regenerated every 120 days. So every 4 months, you're getting brand new ones. They don't all quit at one time. They quit slowly over time. It's not like, bye, Joe, see you later, and a whole brand new crew comes in. No, it changes out slowly. But ideally, we could actually be improving our health with every meal that we eat if we were eating the things that were supportive and provided us with nutrients that we require. We could actually be building a better body, not by like building gobs of muscles and looking like Arnold, but by actually just eating real food and nutrients that our body needs to sustain life and to be healthy. So I think the nutrition part is really important. I think finding resources, local resources, like the organic farms, a farmer's market, and then familiarizing yourself with actually cooking methods that are helpful for sustaining, you know, preserving the food so that you actually get the benefits of real food versus what we currently do, which is a lot of boxed or bags or fast food or what is convenient because we have a super busy lifestyle and we don't have time for it. You could plan your meals ahead of time. You could take a cooking class. There's a lot of free things that are available. I joined a council on social agencies, and I did not know, but Habitat for Humanity does not just help you build your house, but they teach you about budgeting and nutrition and how to make healthful meals and gardening. They do a thing with the agricultural department to teach about gardening. They have finance classes. There's like millions of things that are available in our communities that we just don't know about. Nobody knows about these things, and a lot of them are actually free.
Well, yeah, thank you. I didn't know that other aspect of Habitat for Humanity. That's wonderful. We'll have to check those resources out and put those on social media, some links, and, you know, do expose that in a good way. I think that's necessary. You know, Cynthia, when we were talking, you had mentioned that something about 90% of our health problems can be prevented by daily habits. And it is. It's stacking those cards in our favor a little bit over time. And talking about changing the blood, you know, the lifespan of that red blood cell is 120 days. So I know I encourage my patients, if we just change our diet, if you just focus on that for 90 days, 3 months, you're part of the way home.
Yeah, that's something we all have control over. There was a really interesting thing. So I got kind of involved a little bit in this rogue, I call it a rogue doctor group. Dr. Talks is the name of the program. And I just thought it was a one-off, the first one I had listened to, but they actually have a ton of programs. And one of the programs that I listened to was Ocean Robbins talking about the food revolution. And they're talking about, they actually had an immersive experience where they took people who had health issues and put them into a home setting with a doctor, a nutritionist, a chef, and they learned to make healthful food. They learned how to physically move and work on stress and their abilities to cope with life and changes. And they monitored them through the whole thing, and they were able to come off a lot of the medications that they had come in with, because it was a doctor monitored program, and it was all based on nutritional changes and a little bit of therapeutic, you know, movement. It was nothing crazy. The sad part was they went back and checked on those people 6 months later, and some of those people had stuck to what they were doing, and they really were doing more of a plant-based kind of diet. They had learned these skills on how to cook for themselves, and they were doing well. And then there was one particularly sad case where the lady said, well, my husband doesn't like to eat like this. And even though I benefited from it and it helped me and I was so much healthier, I am cooking for him. So her compromise wasn't to make her meal and then add what he wants to it. Her compromise was to eat the way he was eating rather than modifying the meal. So I felt badly, because I think somebody should have given her that as an idea for an option of how to make this work within the family unit, right? And then there was another little lady who said, well, just the cost of fresh fruits and vegetables and fresh food is just too much for me. I really can't afford to live like that or to eat like that. And that's where I think a lot of people don't realize that there are other ways that they can get those fresh fruits and vegetables. There are programs, there are co-ops where you can get a discount as you order it as a group. And there's a lot of co-ops around where you can do that. So It was very exciting to see the changes, but then it was very sad to see the actual limitations, and I felt like their program wasn't about how can we make sure these people understand that there are other ways to make this happen. I think there should have been a third part to the series that involved, you know, real life solutions for when your partner doesn't want to eat the way that you're eating that helps you and benefits you. When monetary constraints are preventing you from getting the food, what are other ways to get those nutritious items? You know, if you can't garden, what can you do? You could do a co-op, you know, giving people other ideas. And I think that's really important. I think we, like I said, we all get stuck in kind of the same kind of mentality and thinking. And unless we have a friend or someone, you know, and sometimes the most important people are the people that we don't even know. Like, our friends and family members can tell us stuff all the time and we hear it, but we don't act on it. And then suddenly you're shopping in the grocery store and somebody's talking to you in the aisle and suddenly poof, a light bulb goes off. It was the same thing your partner's been telling you for 20 years, but it didn't mean anything until this random stranger mentions it. And it's so weird that we don't, you know, we just don't. Takes sometimes just a weird little interaction and all of a sudden, oh yeah, you know what I learned today? And you're like, oh yeah, well, we talked about that a lot, but I'm so happy for you, honey. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, that does happen. So Cindy, for people who are limited in moving, they have a hip issue, a leg issue, a knee issue. They can't get up and do lunges, do jumping jacks. You know, they're more maybe close to or confined to a chair. What are some resources for them for movement, what I call movement nutrition, exercise, and building muscle and keeping that moving? Do you have any favorites that you know of? Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot.
Well,
I know it.
I will tell you, I unfortunately had the experience of having a traumatic fall and was extremely limited in what I could do. I couldn't stand for more than maybe 2 minutes. I was relegated to tabletop therapy for a while and immobilized for a bit. And I would say anything that you can do, try to do. If your body doesn't do it, I mean, I couldn't even straighten my knee. And I was trying to do it like it was an Olympic event and it barely moved. And just trying to do it was extremely painful after the first day because I did exactly what PT told me every hour, move, you know, try to make your knee straighten 8 to 12 times. And I did it like I was going to get the gold. Okay. And by the end of the day, I hurt so bad. And the next day I was really, I tried, but it just really wouldn't move. Any motion that you can't do, small little motions, if you keep trying, eventually your brain will rewire, you know, okay, that is what you're trying to do. Okay. And it will start to do it. So neuroplasticity is your friend, and persistence pays off. I have seen lots and lots of people who were in much worse condition than I was, who have recovered and are up and functional and mobile, and you wouldn't know that they have long-term issues because they were just determined and their brain didn't sign on to you're doomed. Their brain is like, let's figure this out. Let's keep working at it. So if you can't get out of bed, do exercises in bed. If something doesn't move, try to move it. You know, you are, even if it doesn't actually physically move initially, eventually your body will figure out a way to make it happen. Acupuncture is a really great jump start for people who are having problems where the nervous system is not sending the right messages to the muscles. We can help to stimulate those pathways so that they get better communication. We can use electrical acupuncture to help with that. We can use very strong points to help with that. We can help jumpstart it. And that was another amazing thing that I learned. There's a movie called 9,000 Needles. Oh my goodness. What an inspirational movie.
Yes.
And I hadn't seen it till I was in my doctorate in 2017. And one of my friends is like, you've never seen this movie. I'm like, no. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my goodness, this guy went from not being able to do, from being Mr. Tennessee to being immobilized because he had a brainstem aneurysm, which normally would kill you, but in his case, he didn't know to die. And he ended up being dragged around at home by his little 100-pound wife, and he was 200 and something pounds of muscle. They ended up sending him to China, and he received a lot of therapy. He had timed out in the therapy system in the U.S. It's a fabulous movie to watch.
Yes, I agree.
It was inspiring.
Yeah, 9,000 Needles. Yeah, it was really something. It's the power of that medicine for sure. Dr. Cyndia, we're coming to a close. Could you give us, since your background is more focused on pulmonary and lung health, do you have one health tip for our listening audience? And then also, if people want to find you or want more information, can you share how they can find you, please?
I would say breathing, any breathing techniques and exercises you can do can help reduce your stress level. Diaphragmatic breathing, putting your hand on your belly and feeling your belly rise when you inhale and then exhaling through your mouth. It can help calm your fight or flight. It can help, your diaphragm work more efficiently. That's one of just a very basic breathing technique. My office is in Fort Pierce. I specialize in heart and lung health and physical medicine because I believe strongly in all of those things. And my office is 800 Virginia, Suite 57, Fort Pierce, Florida. And the name of my company actually is Serendipity Therapeutic Massage and Body Work. I did not know I was going to grow up to become an acupuncture physician.
Yeah. And you have a website or phone number?
Oh, the website, it is serendipityacupunctureandmassage.com. And my phone number is 772-521-3638.
Dr. Cindy, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. So good to have you here. We'll have you back. And everyone out there, thanks again for joining us here on the Healthy Living Hour. And next week, please join us at the same time for with Jono and Julie of Our Changing Environment. And in the meantime, have a great day. And please stay tuned for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Thank you.